Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Welcome into the Money Insights Podcast. We talk all things money and business. My name is Christian Allen with my co-host Rodney the Pod Zabriskie. Hey Rod, how was it carrying the show last time? You did great, by the way.
It was a big burden. My shoulders were sore for a couple of days after that, but we made it. We did okay.
Yeah, well, I woke up Tuesday morning, and I'm pretty sure I was infected with our friend COVID. I shouldn't say that. There's nothing friendly about it, but I'm finally getting over it. We're about a week later, and I'm kind of back after it. So thanks again for covering.
You're sounding good.
Thank you.
Looking good.
And I thought it was a really good interview with Julie Broad. So
yeah,
thanks for covering it.
I thought it went really well. Good stuff.
Okay, Rod. So today for our episode, we're going to be talking about kind of a specific estate planning concept. Call it multi-generational legacy planning. And it's kind of a fancy like title. And so lots of people like the name, but even better than the name is that it actually does some really kind of cool, unique, impactful things for families. So today,
absolutely. You're right. The name should get everybody. I mean, that by itself, everyone should be like, I want one of those.
Yes. Well, that's what I thought. In fact, I thought to myself, I think people are going to want one of those. And turns out that it's been true. Now, like I say, the good news is that it's actually a really impactful and valuable tool and concept to be using. So without further ado, Rod, we're going to talk about multi-generational legacy planning, and that we're going to start by defining the problems, okay? And that way we can have some context as we go through and talk about exactly what it is, how it works in a case study. People will know exactly what the issue is that we're actually solving. Okay.
Sweet.
So you've put together this really great outline for us. So like if I botch this, it's completely on me. You've got it well put together here, Rod. Your outlines are much more thorough than mine. So I'm impressed by that. Okay, let's jump into it. The first one is that the person, well, okay, Rod, I'm feeling like I may need to, before I jump right into defining the problem, maybe just throw out some little bit of general context, okay?
Okay.
So we've talked about this concept as an estate planning concept, and that's what it is. But what we're going to talk about is how somebody who already has enough money that they are likely going to be comfortable throughout their retirement years, who wants to then get money to the next generation, and not just to generation one, but also to generation, not just to generation two, but also to generation three. We'll define those a little more clearly here in a minute. But the idea there is that they likely have enough money, and so they want to put in place a structure that they can accomplish this and, you know, help the lives of their family for the next couple generations. So there's a few things that kind of come into play here. Oftentimes when people are interested in passing money to the next generation, their big concern is that is what if I actually need it? So like I said, first of all, it's likely somebody who already has enough money and is not likely to be in a situation where they need the money that they're passing on. Okay. However, it's super important for most people to maintain control, at least throughout their lives, because if something comes up, who knows what that is, catastrophe, medical bills, whatever, market crash, all those types of things can have an impact, and suddenly someone may be in a situation where they need some of those dollars, right? So the first part is that they want to maintain control of the asset. The next thing is that they want to make sure that there's an efficient transfer of assets to both children and grandchildren. So I told you that I would kind of define generation one, two, and three, and you can probably get an idea. But let's just say that I'm a 72-year-old, and I have a few kids who are somewhere between 40 and 50 or whatever, right?
Okay.
That situation, I may be at the stage in my life where I want to start thinking about getting money to them and potentially even to grandkids. So I then am generation one as the oldest, the 72-year-old. My children would then be generation two, and of course, generation three would be their children. And so the idea behind multi-generational legacy planning is to support, help, bless the lives of not just generation 2, but also Generation 3, while maintaining control in Generation 1. Did I lose everybody?
I'm with you.
Okay, good. At least one of you is.
Sweet.
Okay, so a couple of other points that I think are really important. You put on our third point here that it allows you to deliberate with your legacy. To be deliberate, it allows you to be deliberate with your legacy. And what we're talking about there is rather than just kind of having money set aside that could be passed down to kids generally, instead, in this world, we're going to create a trust, a multi-generational trust that yep. can pass money on to kids and grandkids in the very way that we want it to be passed. So, in other words, if I'm really passionate about helping people do service work, or if I'm really passionate about getting my, you know, making sure that my kids and grandkids and next generations are well educated, like those are all things that I can get behind, and I can define inside of the trust exactly how I want that to pass from generation to generation, and some of the things that we even want it to be used for. So in that way, yeah. it's really remarkable how deliberate you can actually be.
Yeah, and it gets at the heart of the whole idea of legacy, right? We have things we're passionate about. We hopefully are passing those things on to our kids, just in terms of philosophy and compassion, or whatever, you know, principles that we want to pass on to our kids anyway. And this just kind of puts some money behind it to allow them to kind of carry that legacy forward.
Yep, you nailed it. One other point as we define the problem, Rod. One of the challenges that some people have is as they get older, they may or may not be insurable, or maybe they're not insurable at the rating that they would like to be. So insurance costs more, right? So in this example, we're going to talk about how the concept is used in conjunction with life insurance and long-term care. So part of that problem is that somebody might want to have those things, and maybe they don't necessarily qualify. And because of that, they're going to use the asset to do some of those things, but also, multi-purpose it to do kind of next generational planning to go with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's well said. And I liked the term you used earlier when we were preparing for this, where just in case people are insurably challenged,
yes,
then
and this that allows is it. Them You're to... right. Oftentimes, well, so okay, we're usually able to get people insured, but like again, as you get older, it just may not even make sense. Even if you're not insurably challenged, it might not make sense because of your age, right?
Yeah.
So for whatever the reason, multi-generational legacy planning uses, instead of me as generation one being the insured on this, we're going to use generation two as the insured. And we'll get into exactly kind of what that looks like coming up here next. Okay, Rod, so now that we've defined the problem, at least for the most part, why don't we talk more about who it's actually for?
Yeah. Okay, so this may go without saying, but the first point that I had is that it's people with adult children. So
brilliant. That is brilliant.
If I don't have generation two or therefore generation three, then this...
So what if you have generation three but not generation two?
We have done some policies where we went directly to generation three.
Okay.
The state.
But in that world, that you would have still had to have a generation two, Rod.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Somewhere.
They were there.
Anyway, okay.
They were there.
You're right, though. There's planning we can do with generation three too. But in this specific issue or this specific concept, we're really trying to utilize the value that an adult has in terms of their insurability.
Yeah, perfect. Yep. And we've talked about a couple of these points. Again, I'll kind of reiterate them a little bit, but the people, you do want to be in a situation where you have enough to cover yeah. yourself through retirement, conceivably, right? Like most likely.
Well,
and then
most situations that we run into, Rod, most situations where we've done this, I don't know if there's anybody that we've done this with that hasn't been, you know, really comfortable throughout the duration of their lives, and looks like they will be.
Yeah.
However, there have been people that maybe or were a little bit closer to that line. And the really nice thing about the concept is that you can pass money on to the next generation without having to give up that control and have to worry about, you know, potentially running out of money. So it's from a purposing standpoint, it's really great because it doesn't just cover your potential need for retirement. It's also going to cover some of these other life goals that you might have.
Yeah, and if anything, I can think of a few situations where the generation one were being maybe overly generous in what they envisioned with going through kids. And there's no problem with that. Like we have no issue at all. But we just had to maybe help them put it together in a way to where they did keep that control. They weren't just giving up the asset and then it's forever gone or at least, you know, outside of their control. Because that was important, right? We didn't feel like that was the best
way to go.
Well,
and for some people, it could be critical. So yes, very important.
Right, yeah. So, and you know, who is it for? Well, it's for people who have kind of a mission in mind or legacy in mind that they want to pass on. And we talked about this. Legacy means a lot of different things. And in past podcasts, we've talked about a lot of people have a concern about passing too much money onto their kids because they don't want it to ruin them or put them in a worse situation by the time they spend it all than they were before they received it. And so we use this trust as a way to allow you to kind of put some structure around it. And again, hopefully you're teaching your kids and grandkids the kinds of principles that they need to just naturally carry on the work that you've already started. But again, this puts some structure around it. And let me just say real quickly on that, the trust isn't a must-have either.
Good point.
Like it could be that as we get into the kind of how does it work, think of it as it's possible to make this all happen without the trust. So just, you know, consider that.
Yeah, it's just that there's more specifications that can be made once you get the trust involved, right? It allows you to take it kind of to another level and be very deliberate about what you're wanting to have happen. From an actual passing money on generation to generation, certainly it can be done with or without the trust. That's a good point.
Yep. And then the last point I have here is it can be really, really valuable for people who like the Investment Optimizer as a strategy and are using it. So, for example, I invest and I have one of these optimally designed life insurance policies that I use loans against. If you're not familiar with the concept, we have some good videos on our webpage and or, you know, past podcasts. So you know, learn a little more about the Investment Optimizer. But for people who use it and like the idea and are again teaching your kids and grandkids the really cool things that you know about investing and want that to be part of that legacy that carries on, then this creates some structure around doing that. And we've talked a little bit about this idea of kind of perpetual family banking, I think is what we called it. And often a question that comes up with that is, well, how do I do that though, right? Like the money is there, the death benefit pays out or whatever. Now they have this money. How do they know what to do with it? Well, that's where the trust comes in, because you can put very specific instructions in there to be very clear about what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. So really the trust does two things. It allows you to be deliberate and it allows you to kind of create the concept in perpetuity, right? Absolutely. If you want to get into, so it's almost like multi-generational legacy planning is the little brother or little sister of what did we just call it? Perpetual family banking, right?
Yes.
They're like, there's a lot of similarities in what they do and how they do it. But there's also a few key differences that can make one or the other, you know, more or less valuable for a person's given situation. Okay, Rod, why don't we jump directly into how the concept actually works? I'm just going to kind of lay it out there, pretty quick. And then we can go back through it if we need to create clarity. But here's how it goes. So remember, we used I'm generation one, Rod. You're generation two. And generation three is Cannon, my little boy. Okay?
Okay.
So here's how it works. Christian, generation one, buys a life insurance policy on Rod Zabriskie, who is generation two.
Yeah, your son.
That's the first start. Okay? So Rod's my adult child. He's only 8 or 9 years older than me, but he is my adult child.
Somehow it worked out.
Somehow don't ask questions. Okay, so here's the good news. Now, I have this policy on Rod's life. I own that policy. I maintain complete control of it. So let's just say I'm putting, you know, I put $1 million into this policy over the next 5 years or whatever. So yeah. Now I'm building up this policy. I can use it for all the same things that we talk about with the investment optimizer. I can go and invest mm-hmm. in real estate or other cash flow things. I can just let it sit there and earn a 5%-ish return. So like I can do all the same things. I maintain complete control. There's no question of whether I can do what I want with it.
Right.
Okay. So now what happens is when I, as generation one, I die, right? The policy is going to pass on now to Rod, generation two. So not a death benefit, because obviously I was not the insured. I was the owner of the policy.
Right.
Rod was the insured. I pass on. Rod now gets to take over the policy. Okay. So now in this case, he's still using the living benefits of the life insurance policy as well. I was using the living benefits of it as generation one. Now it's going, that cash is completely available to Rod to do whatever he wants to do with it, the same way I was able to. And then the idea, of course, is that he'll keep that throughout his life. And now we get the money that passes on to Canon, generation three.
Yep,
pretty
when
simple,
I die.
Pretty straightforward. Oh, yes, you've got to die before that happens.
Yep,
now, you could decide to share some cash before then, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of like the whole multi-generational trust and planning exercise coming to fruition, it does require generation one and generation two to pass away. Now generation three has this money, and hopefully, Rod, we've built it in perpetuity to the point where generation three knows how to do exactly the same thing, and we can then complete the perpetual family banking concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
How was that? Was that clear as mud?
Yeah. I think it was even maybe a little clearer than mud.
Okay.
And so you mentioned specifically about perpetual family banking or the perpetual education fund or the perpetual, you know,
whatever
that legacy is, those things that you
absolutely
dictated when you set up the plan and the trust so that it could benefit me and then later Canon.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, that's great. So Rod, I think the next best place to go, and we kind of did this, but we're going to do it again in a little bit more detail. Take an actual case study. And in this example, we're actually going to use a case study, clients that we have. We'll just change some names, but the general concept will be exactly what we did with them.
Perfect. Okay, so it's going to be John and Betty.
John and Betty. Hey, can I just tell you, can we use Jack and Betty? Those are my grandparents.
Okay, I mean, you know, the John, but he goes by Jack. How's
You're
that?
Right. Well, okay, so yeah. Well, I was actually going to say John and Betty are my grandparents, but yeah, John does go by Jack. So let's use Jack and Betty.
Okay, perfect. Okay. All right, so Jack and Betty, it's a 68-year-old couple. And they are pretty comfortable, they feel like, with Social Security and the pension that Jack had, you know, mm-hmm. from working for the state and whatnot, that they're most likely going to be comfortable. They've identified some money that they would like to pass on to their kids. But they do want to keep control of it. So
okay, so a couple of points here, Rod. One, he worked for the state, you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, and they've been really good, prolific savers, but they're not rich.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? Like they've done really well. They've been great savers. They've amassed a good amount of money, and yet they wouldn't be considered like rich. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Let's say their net worth is right in the $3 to $4 million range.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So like you said, comfortable, they've done well, really well for themselves. And so they're probably not at that place where they are going to be concerned about bumping over like the estate exemption and those kinds of things.
So we're probably not going to get into that kind of really high level estate planning at this space, but clearly they want to do some, they wanted to do some things that would be meaningful.
Yeah. And, it was a kind of mixed family. So, they remarried later in life. Two kids came with Jack, three kids came with Betty. So now they have five kids total between the two of them. ranging in age from 39 to 48. And so what they're going to do is they're just going to split this $1 million up evenly, equally across the five kids, $200,000 apiece, and they're going to implement this multi-generational legacy planning concept. So they're going to start up policies on each of the five children, and we just set it up in a way where the money goes in. As most people know, we can set up these policies to be fully funded within 4 or 5 years, and no additional funds are required beyond that. So we just set it up, go in as quickly as possible, get the money in, working for them inside of these policies. Okay? So Generation 1 still has access, and in this case, they want to continue using them, using the investment optimizer strategy. And so with the different investing that they're doing and have been doing, they just continue to use loans against the policy and flow the money in and out of the policy for those investing. Okay? So when they pass, the cash value is worth about $2 million in addition to the investments and the other stuff that they have going on. And so that passes within the trust, in this multi-generational legacy trust that they set up. It passes to Generation 2 and allows them to continue to invest with the policies. So, and it also has a provision in there to for the education of their grandchildren, so that... Yes, Generation 2 is technically considered like the direct beneficiaries at this moment, but Generation 3 also indirectly receives that, just to make sure everybody gets a good education and continuing on that legacy. Okay?
Okay.
The next thing that Generation 2 is allowed or is dictated through the way the trust was set up is that they can start accessing funds once they reach age 65 for retirement. And it's not meant to be 100% of what they need in retirement. The assumption is they've done some other planning themselves as well. But
really
it becomes
a supplement.
A source of tax-free income in retirement for them for Generation 2.
Which, by the way, is meaningful, especially when you consider that so many other places that people are taking money from are taxable. So, right, if you're Generation 2 in this situation and you know, maybe you've got a 401k and have saved in IRAs, now all of a sudden this, you know, having the supplemental money that comes that doesn't get taxed really has a significant impact.
Yeah, and one thing I think is interesting, just as it relates to just generations being what they are, it's pretty common that when, in this case, Generation 1 passes, Generation 2 is right around that retirement age.
Yep.
Right?
Absolutely.
Usually. And so so it kind of naturally works out that way to become a benefit to them, not just in the investment side, not just in the education of their kids, but you know, turning into some retirement income.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. And for a lot of them, you know, it's nice because if they've been good savers themselves, if they've done a lot, it almost just allows to more easily to continue to perpetually create this concept and let it build.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from that standpoint, it can be really powerful as well.
So now when Generation 2 passes, now we have the death benefit because Generation 1 started the policies, but they started them with Generation 2 as the insureds, right? Mm-hmm. And so when now Generation 2 passes, now there's this death benefit that pays out. It stays within the trust. We have the beneficiary set up as that multi-generational trust. And so now it continues to be for the benefit of Generation 3. But in this case, because it's a family who really likes to invest in real estate and other things, and they want to continue that part of the legacy, it's also dictated that the Generation 3 takes the death benefit and uses it to buy new policies on Generation 3 and or, depending on age, Generation 4. Potentially, right? And then continue to use those funds to invest for educational purposes for their kids. And ultimately, this cycle just continues on with those funds that Generation 1 was so purposeful and deliberate in the way that they made it, put this plan together.
Well, and it can be exciting, right? Because when you think about it in terms of generation to generation, there's like a lot of people that a person can help, even by, you know, setting aside their $500,000 to go to, you know, the next generations, like that can just have such a meaningful and valuable purpose for, you know, so many years to come. So even if you're not one of these super wealthy people, but maybe you've been a prolific saver and you've done a good job and you have like these values, these things that are important to you, that's where multi-generational legacy planning really hits the mark. And so we probably don't talk about it enough, but certainly it's something that we rely on and use frequently as we're, you know, meeting with people, especially when they end up in a similar situation to what you just barely outlined. Okay, Rod, well, I don't think we're gonna go on too long today. I wanna make sure that we focused on the content, get the principles out there. Is there anything that you can think of that we want to clean up or that we missed?
Maybe just that there are different variations that can be done with this. I talked about earlier how the trust is and can be a really important piece with this, but it's not a must have, right? If you're just thinking, hey, I want to pass this money on, but I don't care what they do with it, right? It's completely up to
and
them.
And a lot of people feel that way. And it's still, it's just as viable, right?
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really good point. There's a lot of fluidity and options that come along with it. And I think that's what the reason that people use it is because it's very effective at accomplishing the objective of legacy planning, but it just keeps your options open, right? It doesn't get rid of the asset. You're still maintaining control and you can make changes. It's not a, you know, it's not an irrevocable trust. So, okay, Rod, I love it. Thanks for taking us through the case study. If you're listening and you think we're any good, give us a 5-star review. It's super helpful. Thanks so much for listening to the Money Insights podcast, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit Money Insights.